Next case this morning is case number 57004, Howell versus Pacific Reclamation Water Company. Mr. Stuart Wilson for the appellants, Mr. David Stanton for the respondents.
Justice Cherry, with counsel there, we commenced the proceeding on the earlier case.
Go ahead and give your explanation why you're at the RJC again.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm Justice Pickering, and I'm participating in this by video from Las Vegas this morning, thanks to Justice Cherry, who's the presiding Chief Justice on this panel, and Justice Gibbons' concurrence. My long-term colleague is, whose investiture is today in Las Vegas in Federal District Court at 3 p.m., and there was really no way to be both there this morning and in Las Vegas this afternoon by 3. So we're pioneering argument by video. We've done other proceedings with video participation, but this panel has not. So I wish I could be there in person, but we'll do our best to manage this as we're going with it.
Thank you. Is Mr. Miro in the courtroom? Mr. Goodnow, is Mr. Miro here?
I don't see Mr. Miro.
Okay. When we get to the...
Chris is
you're not on that case. I'm sorry. I was going to have her do the explanation again for the next counsel, but Justice Sato will be on that case. Mr. Wilson, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, I am.
Have at it.
Okay. May it please the court. We're back. Third time. We took your suggestions. In the last case, Howell 2, in which you said that you suggested that perhaps we'd file a quad title action, district court, to resolve the claims, adverse claims against our title. We proceeded to do that. Our action was certainly assisted by your election to disregard remarks in Howell 1 that would have prevented us from quieting title, and we appreciate that. It was actually easy to quiet title. The we went to our title company that had issued a policy to the house when they bought the property, and we obtained a chain of title guarantee. And it arrived, and it traced the title to their property from the patents back in the 1870s all the way down through many, many conveyances to the house. And there was no break in this chain of title. And it also traced, you could use it to trace the water right chain of title, which followed the land title. And the water right chain of title, of course, had been perfected through the Humboldt River Decree adjudication in the name of Metropolis Irrigation Company. And that we also were able to demonstrate as continuing on from them clear down to the Howells. Our opponents did not have a chain of title, didn't even have a wild deed, and they stipulated with us that our chain of title was unbroken. Now, at that moment, they lost their case, although the district judge didn't seem to realize that. But that stipulation terminated their last opportunity to win this case. Their first opportunity had been the gift from the state engineer, which the state legislature shot down. Their second opportunity was to go to court and demonstrate that you're the owner of the property. They failed. And because they failed, they have no way to win. However, they continue to argue claim preclusion. Now, claim preclusion can't resurrect their case from the ashes. It doesn't create property rights. Claim preclusion is not a cause of action. It's a procedural defense. Furthermore, the Supreme Court dealt with claim preclusion back in Howell 2. The same arguments had been made based on events occurring in Howell 1.
So at footnote 24 of the opinion, you feel precludes, makes the claim preclusion argument inapplicable.
Yeah. It does. And And on top of that, why would you send this case up for a quiet title action if it was pointless because it was already precluded by events that occurred in Howell 1? And now they're back, and they're arguing the same events that occurred in Howell 1. But their problem is worse now because they don't have standing anymore. They do not have the ability to demonstrate that they're entitled to the property anymore. Before, in Howell 2, they had an argument because this title had not been quieted. Now they don't. That's gone. And that's very important. I mean, if you can generate a property right with claim preclusion, then it's probably you could probably start placing wild deeds on your opponent's property in advance of litigation in an effort to gain an edge. Now, in the old days, that probably would have gotten you disbarred. But if the law is the way they say it is, you won't be disbarred. You'll be teaching CLE, for heaven's sake. In addition to that, the standing issue, you have Five Star. Now, Five Star was decided about 2 months before the Howell 2. And Five Star is pretty well laid out. And Five Star says, amongst other things, that you are not barred by claim preclusion for bringing up a claim that could not have been brought up in a prior proceeding. And in the prior proceeding that we're talking about Judge Wagner engaged in the process of judicial review of a state engineer decision. That's what we're talking about. And the state engineer did not have the power to quiet title. Judge Wagner, therefore, did not have the power to quiet title as part of a judicial review. The statute was NRS 533-450, which is your water...
Your opponent's point is that you could have, and in fact did, in Howell 1, join your Chapter 40 quiet title claim with your judicial review claim, and that the failure to have done so in Howell 2 leads to claim preclusion. It seems to me that the core issue for me is footnote 24 in Howell 2 by this court and what that does to the claim preclusion argument. Could you comment? Your assertion is that you could not have brought your quiet title action with your judicial review action, but why is that so?
I was not the lawyer at the time, but it was withdrawn. The attempt to quiet title was withdrawn, but the judge did not have authority. Didn't have authority to review a quiet title action if the state engineer did not have authority to rule on title. If you were going to quiet title, you'd have to bring a completely separate action at that time. We, on the other hand, were not concerned with that because we had stipulated with the state engineer in the record at Howell 1, at the time of Howell 1, we had a stipulation in the record. This was Ross DeLipko that did it. And that stipulation said that but for the state engineer's order, the order that was disavowed by the legislature, the chain of title was unbroken. They had presented a good chain of title. So why would you need to do a quiet title action when the state engineer and you had stipulated in the presence of Pacific Reclamation that the title presented by them was okay? That's what had happened.
And the assumption at that time was that the state engineer could determine title issues, correct?
No, it was more that the state engineer had issued an order transferring our property to somebody else, and that happened 40 years ago, and he had the right to do it. That was what the fight was about. The fight was over whether the state engineer in 1944 had the right to take our water right on 30 days' notice and give it to somebody else, in spite of the fact that the state statute that created the state engineer's office said that vested rights could not be impaired by him, in spite of that. Now, that's where the legislature got in the middle of this. So if they can't, if you can't raise the issue in a judicial review proceeding, then it can't be barred by claim preclusion. And Five Star said that.
So well, why couldn't, you still have not answered my question. Why could not there have been a quiet title action in tandem with the petition for judicial review in one action?
You could have filed a separate action. But that, we're talking statute of limitations. That's not claim preclusion. That isn't arising in the same case. That's a different matter entirely. And there wasn't any statute of limitations against the quieting of title. So either party could have been suing each other to quiet title if they'd chosen to over the prior 40, 50 years. The reason,
but what I'm still not hearing an answer to my question of why could you not have combined in one action your claim to quiet title as well as your petition for judicial review? What prevented that?
Because it violated NRS 533-450. The notice provisions aren't the same. If you're going to proceed under 533-450, you have to stick with it. You can't just go out and say, I'm going to quiet title two, or I'm going to sue them for assault and battery or some other darn thing. That's just, it's, if you choose that course, you have to stick with that course. I mean, otherwise, geez, administrative law would be wild and woolly.
So you're saying that claim preclusion simply doesn't arise from a petition for judicial review as to any other claims involving the same transaction?
Sure. It doesn't. It doesn't involve, it doesn't arise. And this court would have caught it in Howell, too, if it had arised.
And that's where you rely on the new G.C. Wallace case?
Yes, I do rely on that. That illustrates an exception to the claim preclusion doctrine. And I think it's a meaningful one. I'll sit.
You have 4 minutes and 45 seconds left for rebuttal. Or the respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I do have a demonstration.
Right, you understand that.
Justice Cherry, before you put counsel on the clock, could you identify the exhibit that I may see if I have it at hand? I think I have most of it.
And I talked to the AV. I guess the AV people were consulted, so hopefully this
what
is
visible.
This is PAP 25.
That's from Howell 1, the initial amended judicial petition for judicial review in Howell 1, right?
That's correct. This is the
Okay. I got it. I know what it is.
Okay, great.
Yes, thank you. I have it at hand.
Sam.
Thank you very much, Justices, Counsel. Several years ago, I was standing in this exact same spot saying, here we are again. And so here I am saying, here we are again. This is the third time I've been here in this case. Same case, same parties over their privies, same underlying water rights. By way of background, and I'll just quickly run through this, this involves 147.44 acres of water on agricultural property north of Wells, Nevada. This case, the underlying substantive case, which is not at issue here on appeal, involves two conflicting chains of title dating back to before World War II. The chain of title that the state engineer relied upon in 1944 and 1945 in confirming these water rights in the name of my clients, Pacific Reclamation Water Company and Metropolis Water Irrigation District, that chain of title arose prior to World War II. The state engineer relied upon a deed from an entity called Cooperative Securities, and there is a chain of title there. There are title documents conveying it to Pacific Reclamation Water District. The state engineer relied upon the standards that were applicable at the time in the mid-1940s. The Pacific Reclamation Water Company has had the water rights, the administrative water rights, regulated by the state engineer since that time, title to the underlying usufructuary water rights, the real property interest, that has been conveyed many times over to many different people since that time. Now, this series of lawsuits over these water rights began in 1999. The Howells brought that case, and so what you see now is the third case in the wake of two previously litigated and decided cases on these water rights. And we're calling this case Howell 3. And the issue before this court right now involves simply the issue of claim preclusion. Everybody knows what the elements of claim preclusion are, but I'll just say them really quickly. The parties or their privies are the same. In both cases, we have that. You have a final judgment, and in this case, we have two final judgments in Howell 1 and Howell 2, both of which are valid. And the subsequent action, and that's this one, is based on the same claims or any part of them that were or could have been brought in the previous cases. Now, the Howells have responded to this argument by saying that the previous cases involved challenges to agency actions, and that a case like this one, a quiet title action under NRS Chapter 40, would not have been, for lack of a better word, appropriate in the prior two cases in Howell 1 and in Howell 2. And in that regard, I'd ask the court to please take a look at PAP 25, page 7, from the pleading filed in Howell 1 in September 2001, just a little over 10 years ago, believe it or not, entitled First Amended Petition for Judicial Review and Complaint for Quiet Title, Adverse Possession, and Damages. And the relief in that case sought to quiet title to the real property interest. That is the relief sought in Howell 1 over 10 years ago. Now, the Howells subsequently amended their complaint in Howell 1, and they took this claim out. To this day, I have no idea why they chose that strategy in that case, but that's what they did.
It certainly answers Justice Pickering's question that it was done.
It was done. It was done. They just removed it. They followed the incorrect procedure and then went forward and asked the district court to order the state engineer to quiet title in their names. That was the wrong procedure. In 2000, 2001, when all of this was happening, the statutes that we're talking about today that prevent the state engineer from quieting title, those are 1995 statutes. Those statutes were in place at that time. This wasn't new law. They just decided to follow that procedure for reasons that to this day remain a mystery to me.
So you would have accepted that pleading properly joined petition for judicial review, which is an administrative agency review device, with a separate claim or theory that if that is not the right claim, surely you could quiet title in our name under Chapter 40. You saw nothing wrong with that first amended complaint in Howell 1.
Absolutely nothing wrong with it. It was procedurally correct. Procedurally correct. The Howells amended the pleadings after that for some reason, but they were following the right procedure. That could have been done. Had there been some sort of an issue about the state engineer's capacity to confirm water rights in light of the conflicting chains of title, the court could have decided one issue prior to the other one, could have stayed that portion of the case. All of that could have been done.
Could I ask you to, and I apologize for the clumsiness of this form, my concern is this. When you get to Howell 2, you get a joined petition for writ of mandamus and petition for judicial review, and Howell 2 disavows much of Howell 1, at the Nevada Supreme Court level, and says, in essence, everybody was wrong. The state engineer has no authority to actually determine conflicting title. And we say in footnote 24, we note that nothing in this opinion precludes the Howells from contesting title ownership to the water rights in a quiet title action in district court. To me, And the G.C. Wallace case adopts Rule 26 of the Restatement Second of Judgments. One of the exceptions in that Section 26 of the Restatement is if the court in the prior action said you can go ahead in some other form, then the rules against splitting claims that underlie claim preclusion don't apply. So why shouldn't we take footnote 24 at face value and as binding on us? That's the hard part of your argument for me.
Well, let me address.
It's a long question, and I apologize for it. But
if I don't answer part of it, please let me know. I do want to address all parts of that question because that is really important. This issue was not really ruled upon by the Howell II court. The Howell II court really didn't examine the issue of the fact that this quiet title action was actually brought in Howell I and then later pulled for mysterious reasons that it could have been pursued. That footnote in Howell II, I interpret as saying nothing in this decision precludes the Howells from pursuing a quiet title action, and that's absolutely true, because that decision clarified the point that the state engineer does not have the authority to quiet title. I believe that the footnote was intended to emphasize the point that a district court quiet title action is the correct procedure to follow when an issue like this arises, where you have conflicting chains of title to an underlying real property interest in a water right. I do not see that footnote as creating an exception to the doctrine of claim preclusion, carving out an exception for this type of claim. Now, we talk about the G.C. Wallace case, a case that really involved the statutory scheme of summary evictions and then a subsequent damage claim. And the court, my interpretation of that decision is the court carved out a very narrow exception based on a statutory scheme that was designed to really divide these types of claims up. Now, let's change the facts a little bit. Because I was thinking about this, let's change the facts of G.C. Wallace a little bit. And let's just say that the landlord in that case brought a summary eviction and a damages claim in the same action, but in the damages claim pursued the wrong procedure. Okay, let's say that case went to a final judgment and at some point in the process, the landlord did not pursue the damages claim. Just dropped it, got the summary eviction. Is that landlord going to be able to come back in court? Let's just get past latches and statute of limitations stuff. Is that landlord going to be able to come back into court over and over, year after year, and keep bringing that claim back? I don't think that was the intent of G.C. Wallace. I think the intent of G.C. Wallace was to say, listen, just because you bring a summary eviction action doesn't preclude you from bringing a damages claim. But that's not the situation we have here. We have a situation where the same claim is being brought or could have been brought several different times. Now, we do not have a statutory scheme that envisions that type of use of the legal process. We have a statutory scheme that involves the orderly disposition of these rights. Had the correct procedure been followed in this case, this quiet title action would have been pursued, there would have been a decision one way or the other, and then we would have proceeded, as depending on the outcome, to see what the state engineer had the ability to do. That was the correct procedure then, that's the correct procedure now. What you cannot permit is to allow somebody to just bring a claim and then not pursue it, drop it, pursue the wrong procedure twice in a row, and then bring us back into court 10 years later to argue the same thing over and over and over again. Now, I would like to make one brief point, is that in terms of policy, there are states that follow something called the Marketable Record Title Act, which you're probably familiar with it. We don't have anything like that in Nevada, but the policy behind that is to put title to rest at some point, where the parties have had title to property in their names for a long enough period of time, at some point there needs to be an end. particularly when people are relying on title, as in this case, over a period of decades and making very important property decisions based on the existence of title. What we have here is a title dispute going back 60-plus years. We also have some underlying issues about the ability, and even if this case is remanded, incidentally, even if this case is remanded to litigate these underlying issues over title, we still have statute of limitations issues, we still have latches issues. We should not have to get to these types of procedural issues. The Howells have had their opportunity. They had their day in court. They had a chance to present all of this. They had a chance to argue it. We ask this court, please, finally and decidedly and conclusively put a stop to this 12-year-old series of lawsuits. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson.
I call to your attention the stipulation, which is in the record. Part 3, this would be page 445 of the appendix, page 446 actually. The parties therefore agree that there is no longer any genuine issue of material fact as to the plaintiff's chain of title, and there are no further issues of fact which require trial on the merits. This is over. I don't know where this deed from Cooperative Security Corporation comes from, but they should have put it into the trial and we should have fought it out at that time if they thought it was going to piggyback them into ownership of this property. But this is done. They stipulated to it. They may like to resurrect it now, but it's too late. The same with their claim preclusion argument. It's too late. They stipulated at the very beginning that, and they being the state engineer and us, and they were there in the courtroom, and it's page 406 of the appendix. It starts there, and they stipulated that the chain of title, this is the state engineer and the house, that the chain of title that had been submitted by the house at that time, which is the same one we used, that chain of title is sufficient to transfer title to the house on the state engineer's records. The state engineer had the right and the duty to make an initial inquiry. He doesn't make you quiet title to everything before he looks at it. He makes an initial determination as to whether your chain of title has a problem or not. And if there is a problem, then you have to go back and quiet title. But if there is no problem, if he makes that determination, then you are entitled to proceed and have your chain of title filed. That's the way it works under the 1995 law. Now, that chain of title was presented, and the parties continued to fight, but not about the chain of title. That's why there'd be no reason to quiet title at that point. State engineer had accepted it, and these people had sat in the courtroom and had not objected. So, if you ever had thought...
But Howell 2 says that there is a genuine conflict as to chain of title. So you're saying that the stipulation in Howell 3 supersedes that statement in Howell 2?
Well,
is that your argument?
It was resolved. Because we brought our chain of title to a court of law, right? A court of, that had jurisdiction to resolve it, which is what's required under the water law. We went to a district court. That was a court with jurisdiction to resolve it, and we resolved it. They didn't have an answer to it. So this state engineer stipulation is why there wasn't any reason to quiet title back then, because nobody was fighting about the title. What they were fighting about was the state engineer's order. That was what the fight was about, and that's why when counsel says, well, you're proceeding in the wrong direction, you're using the wrong procedure, we weren't. We were after the state engineer for issuing an order that took our property away. That's what we were after him for. And the state engineer, he fought us. I mean, I'm sure he wanted the power. It would have been great for him. But they fought us, and they fought us through the court system. We actually lost in Hal 1, as you know. However, then the legislature weighed in and put an end to the whole thing. And the legislature certainly had the right to do that. And what these people are asking you to do is go back and give them what the state, what the legislature said the state engineer couldn't give them. That's what they want you to do. And I'm saying that's beyond the power of any court at this time. This is not a condemnation action. We have property rights. They don't. Nobody's offering us money here. Our people bought and paid for this. For 10 years now, they've had to fight to preserve what they bought and paid for. They say they had a water right. They didn't have a water right. We had the water right. We had the chain of title. They never had the chain of title. And their water right comes from an act that it was an illegal act of the state engineer.
Thanks to both counsel for this case. We're actually glad to see both of you again, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what litigation's about. Keeps us working. So it's nice seeing you. And Justice Pickering, enjoy the investiture of Cam Fehrenbach, and give him our regards.
I certainly will. Thank you.
Are you going to conference with us on this? Are you? I don't know what time they
do. Yes.
Okay. Right.
But is Justice Sato on the next case, correct?
Yes. We're in recess until 11:30.